This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. This summer, America turns 250 years old, and there's no better way to celebrate than getting outside and exploring this great nation. One way to do that is to rent a camper or RV from Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone over 21 to rent an RV or camper without owning one. With Outdoorsy, you can drive it yourself, tow it, or even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. With comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance, Outdoorsy gives you the peace of mind you need when on the road. Outdoorsy is even the perfect option for your next out-of-state hunting or fishing trip. Right now, my listeners can have all service fees removed from their bookings in 2026 with code EMPIRE at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy.com and use code EMPIRE at checkout to remove service fees. It's time to get outside and enjoy your summer. I've been trying underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum. Basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women.
Both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just delight in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight, won't steer you wrong.
Johnny Appleseed himself.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. This week I am joined by Alex Grosso from the Buck Down Podcast. Alex is a Pennsylvania boy and he loves deer hunting just like you and me and the rest of us. And we have a conversation that revolves around summertime. We discuss, you know, we do some catching up and we have some connections based off of our personal lives and things that are going on and how things have changed over time in the world of deer hunting for us as we take on new responsibilities. But then we get into the world of summertime scouting in the month of June and what does that look like chasing deer. And Alex is going to talk about scouting some new properties. We're going to talk about cameras. We're going to talk about the back and forth of using them as tools versus as using them as crutches and how that might have caught us in the past and how we still try to fight that at times. But trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together to put us on something that is going to be satisfying for us this fall and trying to find a good deer. You know, as I think about summertime scouting, as we speak, I'm in the process of trying to help somebody set their property up, and it's involving a lot of summertime scouting and trying to figure out what the deer are doing on the property currently and then how can we manipulate it into something that's even better, more advantageous, more habitat, more food, more bedding, and strategically placed in a way that we can get in and get out and hunt it effectively. You know, not let the deer see you, hear you, or smell you as you approach, hunt, and exit that property. Just giving the illusion that the property is a giant sanctuary. It's just like a park that doesn't allow hunting, and there's gives this illusion of safety. And oh, by the way, you just happen to be at the perfect bottleneck pinch point attraction, and they don't know what's coming because you set it up to hunt like a predator and make it that man, they're just in the kill zone. And I just sometimes I've been so go in many aspects of my life here, whether it be my job or just doing stuff that I've taken upon myself, like house projects and things like that, just stuff that has been non-related. So for me to go out in the month of June here a couple times and be walking the woods diligently and scouting, man, do I have a fire. It's bringing back reflections of, you know, years ago when I used to do it a lot more frequently. Not that I completely stopped. It's just I'm just having overwhelming emotions of I can't wait for fall. I can't wait to be in pursuit of something this fall. And I'm just excited. I mean, to the point where I can't sleep lately, you know, and there's probably a couple of reasons for that. But one of them is like just thinking about hunting, thinking about scouting, all that stuff. I don't know. There's a part of me that feels like that's not healthy because I should get some sleep and do some other stuff. But I don't know. It's just my way of saying I'm excited. There's definitely value in doing some homework and getting prepared in the summer to get ready for fall. And Alex, I think, does a great job of firing us up for that conversation and getting us thinking ahead. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode with Alex. If you haven't, check out his podcast, The Buck Down Podcast. Get it anywhere you get your podcast, just like you would for this show. And before we jump into this episode, check out our sponsors, Radix Hunting, makers of awesome ground blinds from pop-up blinds all the way up to hard shell. Tree stands, trail cameras, a lot of gear that are value, especially in an episode like this. Also, Little Mountain Outfitters. Guys, go to littlemountainoutfitters.com. Check out all they have to offer for bow hunting and more. Support local business. If you're in Richland, Pennsylvania, I encourage you to go check them out. But if you go to their website and check out what they have to offer, you can use the code Woodsman10, that's Woodsman10, and save yourself 10% off of your next purchase. Have a great week, guys. Joining us on this week's show, I've got a buck down, Mr. Alex Grosso. Thanks for joining us, my man. How's it going?
Good. I like that one. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure.
I appreciate it. I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk to you again. So we'll have some fun.
Absolutely. We just got to connect here recently. I did an episode on your show, and we're swapping back and forth. So it's great to have you on. It's always interesting when you get to be the guest on the show, isn't it?
It is. It's fun. It's different. It's definitely different.
I always feel like it takes the pressure off. Like you don't have that pressure of like, I have to come up with some organic, you know, good questions.
Yeah. The pressure, I guess we can call it pressure. You know, it's just kind of like, I'm just like sitting back, relaxing now. And, you know, I don't got to dig the conversation deeper to keep it going. Sometimes, you know how that goes.
Absolutely. Man, why don't you introduce yourself for those who aren't familiar with you and talk a little bit about your podcast and, you know, about your ways into that and hunting and such.
Yeah, man. So my name's Alex Grosso. I'm from Western Pennsylvania. Born and raised here. Grew up hunting here pretty much my whole life. Really took it serious, you know, just the traditional rifle hunting growing up. I had a bow. I would shoot in the backyard and kind of pretend to hunt. And then really got into hunting not religiously, but pretty seriously after, you know, during college, starting trying to learn and apply myself of what I was learning to other podcasts. I think the first podcast I ever listened to, I remember going on Spotify and just typing in deer hunting podcasts, and there was hardly anything, and now there's a lot. And I always thought it was just like really, really cool to like hear people talk about their stories and hear people's different strategies. And, you know, as time went on, I started teaching my buddies, you know, just about the outdoors and just basic hunting things, you know, from setups to bows to, you know, woodsmanship to everything. And I had a lot of fun doing it. And, you know, he was like, you know, you should start your own page. So I started a page. I named it Buck Down on Instagram, and you know, got a little bit of traction, and I had fun doing it. And I just kept learning and wanting to learn, and I also wanted to help others as well. So I said, heck, I'm going to start a podcast with my buddy Brad. So we're like, we'll start one up, we'll have fun with it, and you know, that'll be our thing. And Brad never joined the podcast. It's just me. I call him my distant co-host. He joins about once a year. He'll be on. But, you know, he's got a big family, and family life took over. So after like the fourth episode, he told me that he wasn't going to do it, and started seeing like listeners. I'm like, this is fun. I just kept going. Here we are 2 years later. We're still podcasting. And man, I'll tell you what, the people you talk to and, you know, the things you learn is awesome. It's something I would have never expected it to be like.
Absolutely. Anytime you get to have the opportunity to chat with somebody that has a perspective or experience that you never had, it draws stuff. So like you start out with the show of podcasts and trying to think about content that's going to create attraction for a page and create a brand. And, you know, you want to have all these things and be very widespread, and you're doing it for the brand, for the show. And then over time, what I've realized is so much of this is done selfishly for me, because I get to talk with Alex. I get to talk with all kinds of people, and I get to ask them the stuff that I want to know about, and helps me become a better hunter, helps me become a better, sometimes a better dad and a better husband, sometimes just a better person. Too. And those conversations, while it's become selfishly for me, it's cool that there's folks that have listened along, you know, followed along and listened to the show and supported the show and met a lot of great relationships. And that's what this is. I mean, it starts out, at least for me, it starts out as dreams of the hunting world and what's that going to do for your livelihood. And then it just changes to, this is a networking opportunity and a great way for me to connect with people and share cool stories, experiences, and be connected in that way.
Yeah. And like, you know, I'm thankful to be here talking to you right now. Right. And, you know, without these things, there's a lot of people that I would have never met or never had a conversation, just like me and you right now. So like, these are the moments that create, you know, friendships, whether I may never meet you in my life, but hey, I'll have your number and we'll text each other and, you know, we'll become friends. Right. But when it first started doing any of this, it's like, oh man, that'd be awesome, watching the hunting public, like hunting for a living, doing all that cool stuff. But like, things have changed so much since then. It's like I'm on autopilot of just, this is what I'm doing. Like, sometimes I look back, I'm like, why do I talk about deer hunting literally once a week at least with other guys? It's like, it's just a passion. Like I enjoy it. I love it. We're all sharing that same passion that we have. And I don't have friends who are like super diehard hunters. So, you know, after a hunt or something, you have a good hunt, you see your target buck, or right now we're in velvet season, we see these big velvet bucks start coming up. It's like, I want to show my buddy, my friend that. And it's like, now I have like people who I can like trust and talk to, and like, you know, you can vent, but also you can share excitement together as well. And one of my best buddies now is someone who, you know, I actually ironically met him when I bought one of my cars about 5 years ago. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I have a page. And I'm like, hey, well, I just started one too. And, you know, now we talk every single day, we hunt together, and it's fun.
So one of the thoughts I had as you're discussing this and we're having this conversation, do you feel, so like you have a show, you reach out to people and you initiate conversation and lead conversation for a show. Do you find that since you've done this now for 2 years, has it changed your personality and communication in the real world?
So two things with that. And yes, it has. So one of the best books I've ever read was How to Win Friends and Influence People. And any podcast host out there, I recommend, and this is for any leadership, anybody, one of the most genuine books of, you know, having conversations with other people and just, you know, interests and other people's passions that you share. But that book helped me out a lot with, you know, having conversations with strangers and bringing up different topics, but over time of doing the podcast as well, most certainly. And you know, every guest is different, and you know, you have some people who are maybe more quiet and laid back, and then you have people who don't shut up, which those are the best people to have on, right? And you know, so yeah, I would say it has changed, and you know, I've learned to talk with the different style of talkers, I guess we want to call it that. And yeah, it's a good time. I mean, some people can just ramble on and take up the whole episode, and you know, you probably like that as well. But yeah, you get to talk to a bunch of different personalities. Everybody's different. Like, you know, you're not talking to the same guy every week. Well, depending on what you do, but you just see, the biggest thing I see is like the variety of knowledge that like from one hunter has to another. Like, one hunter may do something completely different, but they're mature buck killers, right? But they both like, they may disagree with one another, but they have their own styles. So like, seeing everybody's different styles and like trying to mix it all together is you learn a lot with that.
Now, you're a deer hunter, I'm a deer hunter, and that's what started my show, and I think that's what started your passion behind it. But as you've done this now over time, doing over 100 episodes and having these week-to-week deer hunting conversations, has it gotten old at any point for you that you're like, I want to talk about something a little bit different?
100%, yeah. I still.
Did you ever think that would happen when you started?
No, I didn't. And I'm sure, like, you just kind of... You can talk about strategy a lot, and I think deer hunting is a lot of strategy, like 100%. But I think a lot of it is mindset and attitude too. And like you said, like outside of deer hunting, like everything's good at home, right? You're being a good parent, you're being a good dad, a good husband. Like those things affect you in the woods too. Like you don't want to go drive to Ohio or wherever you're from, go drive an hour and a half, 2 hours, when it's your wife and two kids at home. And, you know, it's a nice day outside. They may want to go to a pumpkin patch or whatever. Like, now that I have a kid and I think about that, it's like, I can't do that. Like, I'd stay home, right? But, yeah, I kind of lost my train of thought there. I was kind of going 1,000 miles per hour.
Well, and but, that's exactly right, because I've found the exact same thing happen to me, Alex. As time goes on and you get stretched to different avenues of life and responsibilities, it just makes your mind drift a little bit. I said this to you on your podcast when I was a guest, like my focus is not there the way it once was, but I still enjoy this podcast. I still enjoy talking hunting and meeting people, but it's allowed it to zoom. I used to think about like when people would talk about the zoomed out view and being holistic and thinking about, you know, it's not just deer, it's other things. I used to think that was ridiculous and roll my eyes. And now I'm starting to go, that's not just deer hunting. So it's coming full circle on me.
Yeah, that's what I've learned a lot. It isn't just deer. And it's fun talking about mindset and mentality. I actually enjoy that. Because that all affects you in the woods, right? Being disciplined. Like, you got to be disciplined to kill a buck. You're not going to kill it on your couch. Like, you got to make, I don't want to use the word sacrifices, but, you know, you got to make hard decisions, and maybe you got to be able to adapt and make those changes in the woods, right? A lot of people, you know, a lot of podcasts, and including mine, you know, we talk about strategies and whatnot, but like that is part of strategy, is adapting and, you know, having a good mindset going into your hunts. Like, I always hear people talking about Western hunts of like, yeah, I was out there for a week and a half and man, like, you know, I left maybe not on the best terms for my family, and I struggled the whole time. And then the other guy's like, oh, well, you know, I always make sure everything's perfect, everything's good, and then I go and I have the best time. And that changes your total mindset throughout that hunting trip, because it's important. It's your life. You know, deer hunting isn't everything for us.
You brought up the word discipline there, and I kind of want to dive into that for just a moment. And I'm curious, when you think about it from placing your feet in the shoes of a hunter, and let's just go from your life, like what with your day-to-day, with your job and home and your passion in hunting, what does discipline look like to you?
Man, discipline is, I would word it, and this isn't the definition probably, but, you know, the willing to to do things consistently, routinely, in a manner where, you know, it's not easy. Willing to overcome challenges, willing to overcome hardships, staying in a routine. So, for example, when I think about this every deer season, is I like to get up at 4 a.m. I like to go and work out and go to the gym. And it's a routine. It's a constant. It makes your day so much better. And every deer season, I'm like, I'm so glad I do this because I kind of get right up out of bed, right, and go hunt. And to me, I think that's discipline. Going and scouting, you know, week after week, but staying consistent. You have a goal that you want to go achieve. So you got to keep that mindset and stay disciplined in achieving that and not fade away and go the opposite direction and say, oh, well, today it's raining or my legs are sore, my back's sore. I think once you start going down those pathways, you start to get away from the discipline. So for me, discipline is staying on that mindset, that path of you have a goal and you want to achieve that goal. And whether you achieve it or not, the success is the work, the discipline that was put into it.
Right. So how does outside influence change your perspective of it shouldn't necessarily change your perspective of discipline, but how has it affected you? And let me what I'm getting at is there was once a time you weren't married and you weren't a dad, and how you were disciplined and how you allocated time is probably different now. Discipline doesn't change, but how does your mindset change, or how do you stay disciplined with outside influence?
Man, I mean, it's tough. You got to keep going, I guess. I don't want to sound like a David Goggins here, but I mean, I guess you just got to keep going, right? Like, I mean, you're going to have outside factors affect you in everyday life, no matter what it is that you're trying to do. And it's just the adaptability around it, whether we'll use going to the gym, for example, maybe you can't go to the gym in the morning. Maybe you work extra hard the next day, or maybe you go in the evening, right? So adapting around those things, and that happens in the deer woods too, is not everything goes right. So you're going to sit there and say, well, this isn't going to work out, or you're going to go chase your goal, try to adapt and go do something different now that will make sense and that will work out for you.
Yeah.
You know?
I've been struggling to think through, and I shouldn't do this because it's almost like comparing my life to somebody else's life, but I'm going to do it in this case because this isn't the only time I've heard a story like this. So I was at a wedding a couple days ago and was talking with somebody that I don't get to see very often, and we didn't really talk about hunting that much lately, but we got to talk about this past hunting season. And he had mentioned that he got a buck with a bow. I said, oh, cool. And he told me, he said, that is the first buck that I've shot with a bow in over 15 years of hunting. And I just thought, whoa. And I know from this person's past that they spent a lot of time in the woods. They did a lot of hunting. There's a lot of pictures and history and stories. And there's just a moment of time where, and I say a moment, I mean a decade or more of knowing this person. And man, they weren't really talking about hunting and stuff they were doing. And I'm just thinking, did they lose interest in what? But, he says to me, he says, you know, at this point now, I finally feel, you know, with my four kids, moving on with certain things, you know, I have a full-time job, and then I always had a side job that I was self-employed in, and I'd work my tail off all the time. Yeah. And I finally feel like now I'm at the point where, you know, that season of my life is coming to an end, and maybe I can find some more time to hunt. And there's a part of me that says, man, I would never, ever want to get that point where I have a season of my life, 10, 15 years, that I don't get an opportunity to shoot a buck. And I think, man, is that discipline? But then I think, or maybe sometimes the discipline is being able to swallow my pride and passion. I struggle with that. Yeah. And I don't know where I'm going with that. And it's a hard thing to swallow.
I think, I think it can go both ways, you know, like whether you were disciplined throughout that and you kept going to try to get it, or maybe you didn't go out as much because your focus is on your family and your kids, right? Like But to a sense, though, I don't think that should be I think that should just be natural, right? Like, you're focused on your kids. I would feel weird saying, oh, I'm very disciplined at, I don't know. I'm very disciplined at, you know, spending time with my family. Or I want to, I don't know. I don't like the sounds of that. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but.
Yeah,
I don't know, but I see your point though. I mean, there might be something to it.
Well, and I've kind of meant it from too, like not necessarily being disciplined to be focused on family, but being disciplined enough to fight through adversity and still be a hunter and still be disciplined enough to do the hard stuff even when you got a lot on your plate. And you know, I try to. What I'm trying to answer the question for myself is, am I quitting, or am I? Like, am I coming up with using my family as an excuse to not fight through stuff and be disciplined enough to fight through? Or is this really life and I need to recalibrate because I've made decisions that have altered my life and therefore I need to adhere to my responsibilities more? I don't know where the line is and I don't know how to draw that line.
Yeah, I thought it came to my mind when you were talking and it slipped away from me, but like we spoke the other day about, you know, if the wind is bad or if you know this spot you want to go to so bad, the deer's daylighting in there, right? He just daylighted. People can have their own opinions on this, but the wind is horrible. It's swirling, whatever. Discipline is saying, I'm not going to hunt today. You know, I'm going to save this hunt for another day and I'm going to go spend time with my family, right? Like that discipline of not going there because you know it's bad. Mm. I think that's where the discipline is of choosing your hunts the right way. Of, I'm not going to go spoil a hunt where my target buck is. I'm going to go wait for the perfect weather. And like we spoke the other day, like talking with people and hearing people talk, like that's one of the things I see that's similar between like all these guys who constantly kill big deer is like they are so stealth, and so undetected and perfect with their hunts. That they only go hunt when it is literally perfect in these certain spots, like when conditions are perfect. And I think that's a lot of discipline. Cause I know for me, man, I'll tell you what, I can't tell you how many times I've looked at a map and be like, hey, I'm going to go hunt it and try to play the wind a little bit and see if it works out and not see a single thing, you know?
It happens for sure. That's definitely the world of hunting. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's start talking about this upcoming season a little bit. So as we're recording this is an episode in June. And June, for me, is one of the hardest times as a deer hunter. Turkey season just ended. I had pretty serious bird brain. I kind of got burned out by the end. And I'm in the busy season of work. And, you know, antlers, I saw some bucks today when I was at my job. And they're not even quite out to their ears, the ones that I saw.
Dude, March is the worst for me. I hate March. March and April kill me every year. I don't like them.
Yeah. And now June. So where do you find yourself with the mindset and preparation in June?
So last June, like last summer, I didn't spend as much time in the woods as I typically would want to. So this year I am going out, like I'm making sure I, you know, working with the family, the wife, getting, you know, compromising and talking on, you know, making sure I'm on dad duty, trying to get out in the woods a lot more. So I had a deer that I was chasing for 2 years ago. I was chasing him. He disappeared. And then I am 95% certain he just showed up on camera because there's a couple features that are identical. He disappeared and he showed up like last weekend. So I'm like, holy cow. Like if this is him, this is the story continues. Like the book is not done yet. So my focus right now is collecting as much more information on this deer as I can. So putting cameras out, scouting, going, trying to find his track. I'm real big on tracks this year. A lot of people have talked to me about it. So I want to go try to apply myself and see if I can pick up his track. You never know. I mean, that might help me out later in the season, but really just figuring out this deer. I want to learn the deer again. And I do know his tendencies, and it's crazy because where I found him on camera, it's a different spot, but it's the same tendency that he had at a previous area as well. So I was like, that's interesting. But summer scouting, I feel like for summer scouting for a lot of people, I don't know. It's obviously it's not like the fall in season scouting. It's not like postseason, you know, it's a lot more fuller, but I just think being in the woods and seeing the terrain and just trying to find a deer or any deer at any time of the season is just the best. Like right now, I kind of feel like I'm not totally dialed in, but I feel like I will be here in the next month or so just from being in the woods, dude. Like whether it's something small, just it kind of like, you know, I might have rust on my brain right now from, you know, I'm not in the woods every weekend like I am in the other times of the year. So like I'm just shaving off rust. So whenever the season comes, I'm like, I know this property a little bit better. I know tendencies with the deer, maybe. I know how they're using the land. We open up early here. So middle of September is a great time to, you know, it's a great opportunity to get a deer in its early season pattern still. So that's what I use summer for a lot is, I guess, just the patterns in that early season, see how the property is being used. I'm starting to grow on fawn dates too. You know, finding when fawns pop up first in certain areas and backtracking those dates. There's a couple guys I listen to and who I talk to who are real big on that. So I'm starting to put that in my arsenal. And just being in the woods, man, I think that's the best thing for us hunters all year round. Finding deer, finding their patterns, if you can. I mean, I'm not saying patterns, but just see the areas that they're using. Food, acorns. We had two good acorn crops the last two seasons, at least here. So we'll see come August and September, because I know you had a couple late freezes here. So I don't know how much that'll affect it or not, but we'll find that out.
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost spring and summer planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed. When you think about getting information during the month of June for this coming season, you know, you were talking about tracks and trail cameras and patterns and stuff like that. Like, more specifically, like, what do you think are some of the pieces of information that you can gain now that really give you a one up or an edge as you approach that September time frame?
I mean, it can change, right? Like, they're in their summer patterns, so if you can. And then come September, if they're still in that pattern, I mean, if I can find a buck consistently on camera right now, like consistently, I've had this happen in the years past and it always backfired on me and they disappeared like literally like the week of the opener, the week before the opener. So like when I get buck intel, I don't be like, oh, I'm hunting this spot. I'm going to go pick my kill tree. Unless I like know, if I knew there was a buck who religiously spent his whole time here throughout the season, then yeah, definitely. But just seeing the antler growth, the bucks that are in the area, and then that just kind of gives me the confidence to be like, okay, well now I got to go find him. I know he's here now in the summer. If he's not going to be here in the fall, where will he be? And then that's when it comes into finding food, finding, you know, community scrapes, known bedding area, where the does are bedding. And then, you know, you can kind of, if a doe is bedding over on this ridge, well, let's go check this adjacent ridge to see if there's a buck activity, buck sign over here from the previous season. Or, you know, if we're coming in late August, start, you know, just drop a camera. I think if you use trail cameras, dropping a SD cam or a trail cam or a, what the heck, like I'm really having a brain fart here. An SD cam.
Yeah.
Any camera, whatever, and see if he pops up, see if he shows up, and then you know you're in the right spot. And I like hearing guys talk like they don't use cameras, and well, they use, you know, just buck sign, mm-hmm. like rubs. I think there's so much to rubs that people overlook. I'm actually a big rub guy. I love buck rubs. I think there's a lot to them. I think that's information that people think only happens at night or is doesn't really mean a lot. But to me, I love those. That tells me there's a buck in the there's a buck who is using this area at one point or another. And I'm not just talking about like a regular buck rub. I'm talking about like a cluster of rubs that are all together. And not a rub line, just it's a cluster of rubs that a buck leaves too much sign behind, and you know he's there is there. And if he survived the season, if you're there in the summer, you can like pin this spot and be like, oh, we'll come back here. We'll take a look. We'll drop a camera and see what happens. Or if you don't use cameras, then do your own woodsmanship things.
Yeah, you were talking about, you know, a little bit on the summer side of things and maybe going into fall patterns, and can you get one that's like late on making the quote-unquote fall shift? I mean, you've heard a lot of people over the years talk about the fall shift, and I'm sure you've chased deer over the years that you've had pictures of and seen, and all of a sudden they vanish in the fall. So do you find ways to scout for not necessarily the one you see now, but scout for the one that could show up during that shift?
Yeah, I mean, so like a buck that I may not even have on camera or know that exists.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I so like I'll use Spartan Forge a lot, and you can see like wind patterns throughout the different months of the time frame. So we have like typically like a northwest dominant wind here in the fall. So, you know, I want to spend leeward ridges scouting that and finding sign, basically scouting like in the summer or for whatnot, but where that deer will be in the fall time. And again, I think it's really it can go a million different directions, but depending on how you break it down, it's like, again, like I said, like I love buck rubs. If I see clusters of rubs on a leeward on a southeast facing slope, like in the fall time, that'll be the main leeward ridge. I'm going to pin that and be like, there's a buck using this spot at one point or another. Now I just want to know when and who it is. Even using scrapes. And, you know, I believe really, I strongly believe, you know, a smart deer, a mature deer is going to come downwind of the scrape a lot of the times. And we'll go downwind of that scrape and see if there's any sign. If you have a community scrape that goes into the summer, go down there and check it out. It doesn't hurt to find out, and if there's nothing there, then you cross the box, right? Although I have killed a deer before, a big one in Pennsylvania, where he left no sign at all, and I was like, who the heck are you? And it was outside of the rut too. So but it doesn't hurt to go find and see if there's something there or not that's going to tell you something, right? Make a pin and go check it in 2 months whenever these bucks are maybe outside of into their fall shift or right before their fall shift.
I think that's
cover is huge. I think cover is the super important. I think that's actually the most important thing that I consider, at least once I started applying cover to everything. That's whenever I started seeing some more deer.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point too. You know, you brought up finding sign that was made in the fall, in the summertime, and then going back and checking that. I think what you're talking about doing there is the exact same thing that people talk about, or can be applied the same as when people talk about seeing a deer do something at specific points in the calendar year. You know, I have a buck that I watched, and as a 3-year-old, he daylighted in this block of timber somewhere between October 23rd and November 2nd, but then he kind of left again. And you see that via that trail camera picture. Well, the same concept really happens, because if a deer spent time in a general area, whether it was, you know, for a 10-day span, he bedded here 5 times and then was vanished from that area and laid sign down in that area, there's probably a window when that is happening. So knowing and finding that, and if that deer is still alive, and if there's a pattern that's similar, going back and circling back to check in on that, and then fine-tuning the time of that, that's a great point. And I think that's probably something that can get overlooked. I know that's something that I will often forget about doing. I feel like I'm too far looking ahead and looking for the next piece and the freshest stuff versus circling back to the old stuff.
Yeah, like summer scouting for me isn't like, I love in-season scouting. That's my favorite. And I think it's a lot of people's favorites. And then, you know, postseason is like, okay, that's a history lesson of the deer, right? Like we just said, an example, the you know, the sign we find, that big buck rub, cluster rubs we find in postseason in a certain area. Okay, well, now I want to go there in the summer and scout that property a little bit more just to learn about it, you know, and then maybe drop a camera there to see what happens, you know, come, you know, late summer to early fall. So it's like I want to pin those spots to go back. I guess I'm backtracking in a sense of where, like, what looks good in this area, the cover, the food, is there water nearby, good terrain, like set one up somewhere in there, a camera somewhere in there. See if he comes by, and if he doesn't, then he doesn't come by. But like, you can't rely on your camera, so that's why I think the sign is also an important factor as well. Because I heard on a podcast the other day that like a camera picks up like 0.00% of a buck's daily or like daily activities, and it's like, man, like that's crazy to hear.
Oh, it absolutely is. But I think it goes to show you, you know, if that's a relatively close number, which I can't see why it wouldn't be, it goes to show you how much putting your faith into a camera picture can really throw you off. And I think that happens. I've been guilty of that before myself, where you get fixated on cameras and you make poor decisions off of that.
The one year, man, the deer I just brought up that came back, I spent the whole year just chasing cameras, and I learned so much on, you know, how to use cameras as a tool after the fact, because he would show up and I'd go hunt the camera and I'd be like, what the heck am I doing wrong? And then he'd be on another camera. I'm like, I gotta stop doing this. This is not the way to do it. And I just beat myself up more than anything doing that.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard thing to do. If you came from a young age and you started with cameras and then you followed with cameras and filed in learnings to scout for deer, I think it can sometimes be hard, because it's like you laid the foundation of using cameras and then following sign, where the some of the best hunters I know are the opposite. They hunted by learning the woods, learning sign, and then when trail cameras became a thing and they started using them, they used it as a supplementation to based off of the foundation of understanding woodsmanship, understanding deer behavior and deer sign, what's fresh and what's stuff. And then when they put that icing to the cake and getting that real-time image and being able to say, well, that's not a two-year-old doing this. This is a mature buck, and he's got a set of headgear I want to go after. I think that's when it made some really good hunters and really great hunters turn pretty seriously and deadly.
Yep. I don't have any preference on what kind of camera you use. I have cell cameras out there and I have SD cameras out there, but one thing I see with my buddies and, you know, I've seen with myself is whenever I have a cell cam out there, I'm scouting the camera and I'm not scouting the land, versus whenever I go set an SD camera up, I'm forced to go check that camera. I'm forced to keep my mind, you know, familiar with where that camera's at. For example, like I'm going to go back and scout in this area where the camera's at. Not right where the camera, I'm not going to go in there every single weekend and bust out the woods, but like, I'm going to spend a lot of time scouting that area. And I've seen myself where it's like, when I have a cell cam that's pointing, you know, 15 yards, right? That's it. That's the only part of the land I know. And I feel myself being more lazy whenever I'm reading intel off of cell cameras, because I don't feel obligated to go learn more about what's going on in there, if that makes sense. Like, whenever I have an SD cam, I'm going in the woods. I got to go check it. I got to go find a perfect spot, because I don't want to, you know, waste a full half year on trail camera data that didn't produce anything. I just feel like I'm way more involved when I started, you know, putting more SD cameras out. And I still run cell cameras. I just put a cell camera out 2 weeks ago and I love them. They're the best thing ever. I wake up and I see a picture to, it's a big buck, and nothing's better than that. But I think going out in the woods and checking your cameras is good too. And last summer, I've found myself waking up in the morning and going actually at 4 or 5 in the morning to check cameras and stuff. And that's fun, man. I love doing that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's, I'm glad that you're having a pretty open conversation about this with me, because, you know, I've heard in the world of hunting media and stuff like that where folks talk about, oh, they're not hunting their cameras, they're using it as a supplementation, but they're not hunting that camera. And I think the vast majority of people using cameras are using it as a crutch or using it as, and as their main source. And I do it often, and I'll be the first to admit it. I do that more often, especially now more than ever because of, you know, we talked about earlier time and stuff. But like, I think there's a lot of people that want to sound He-Man and macho that they're big woodsmen and they're great at doing this and they're not hunting the cameras. But they also have 20 cameras out, and they're following and sitting in the locations by those cameras. Tell me you're not hunting by those cameras. A lot of us are. At least let's talk about doing it. And if you're doing it and you're successful, say about how much you credit. Because I still think to this day, you pull cameras out, you wipe the slate that you can't use cameras out there, you completely change the dynamic of hunting pressure in this whole community.
I've thought about that a lot. I would actually love that because I run into so many cameras all the time, and I'm like, it's like right when I get to the spot I want to be, it's like boom, cell cam.
Yeah,
right there. It's like I can't even take a pee because next thing you know, I'm going to be on a meme somewhere taking a pee because someone's trail camera. But you know, I have friends who hunt cameras and they're good at it. Like they put deer down. Like they do. I see how I perceive it that they do rely on their cameras. But whatever they're doing, setting up or putting them in the right spots, like they're still timing out.
Absolutely, great point.
There, and they still got to be safe. It's not like, and that's why I back people up a lot. Is okay. You have a deer show up on camera, right? Well, we don't know if that deer would have shown up if you were there. Your wind might have been bad, your access, et cetera.
So great point.
When you go hunt a deer that just showed up on camera, it's not like wind and everything goes out the door. You still got to be very perfect with getting in there because, especially if it's a mature buck, he's in a bust. He probably knows where you're coming from or where people are coming from. Like, there's still a lot to it. And that's why I back, you know, the people, haters up, and I'm not a hater. I don't want to sound like I'm a macho man either because I do use cell cameras, but, you know, it's all the same game. And, yeah, you know, a deer shows up on camera, you go hunt it and shoot it in your backyard. That's different, right? Like, I think there's ethical parts with it, and then there's, you know, still hunting parts with it. But you still got to beat the deer, dude. You still got to know where it's at unless you have it on camera bedded sleeping right there. I mean, then that's a perfect world for your camera then, but you still got to know where he went to, where he's at, where you got to set up, get in there quietly. Like it's not easy.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. Putting a cell camera out there and getting a picture of it does not mean you're going to easily have it. You still have to have your wits about you. But I think the camera with a good hunter is going to make their ability to be successful much greater. And there's nothing wrong with that, with it being legal. My thing is, I think there's an overwhelming amount of people that, and I've been guilty of this at times in my life too, where you don't recognize that it is creating a high level. Like I think sometimes when we use cameras and they aid in our success, we try to dumb it down like there was a lot more to it than that. But think about how many deer have died in the last 10 to 15 years because of cameras.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet it's a whole lot, man.
Yeah.
And to your other point, though, it's like I love, like, you got to be a good woodsman, yes. I think. And that's where it starts to take away. I think there's things coming in that take away from woodsmanship, depending on how you use them. Like people talk about drones, people talk about cell cameras, people talk about baiting, a whole bunch of stuff people can talk about for hours upon hours. But I think woodsmanship is, you know, crucial, and it's you got to know it to, you know, understand the deer and just being in the woods and deer movement and sign. I mean, like some people can find little chew marks off little whatever trees or bushes. And it's like that's something I pass up so much probably is like feeding sign of like off of plants and whatnot. Like some people, they look at that right away and they're like, look. Like they see it everywhere. To me, it's like I got to get it magnifying. I'm like looking down at everything trying to see. But, you know, like deer poop scattered throughout an area. Maybe that's, you know, deer are feeding in there. They're up and moving. Like, those things are super important as well. And I think most, 90% of hunters know a lot about all this stuff. It's just sometimes when we talk about the ethical things of these things, it gets brought up again and we make it sound worse than it is. But I think realistically, you know, majority of the population is ethical. Majority of the population are good woodsmen. It's just whenever there's, you know, different podcasts and conversations going on, I think it might alter the perspective a little bit, like, oh, all these people do this and that. So,
right. You know, one thing, I've had this conversation with a couple of people on the show and then off the show as well. You brought up earlier about going back in and finding more cell cameras and going and seeing places you think you have it to yourself. You go, bam, there's a cell camera. And that used to really, really frustrate me, deter me a little bit. But I've come to the realization there's a lot of people that get excited and go back in and hang a cell camera up to get information. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that is spot is tainted and being hunted, over hunted, and that it can't be a good spot, and that it's not like that you've been beat to it. I just think it means somebody went and took the time to put a camera up with lithium batteries and got cell phone service. So now they're getting that 15-foot circle, a picture every time something walks in front of it. But that doesn't mean that you can't have success there.
I every camera I see like that, what I'm going to spot that I love, I just wish I had that dude's number. Like, I could just call him, like, hey, man, like, I'm looking at this spot too. Let's freaking be friends and hunt. Like, I don't know, man. Like, it's like, hey, like, I don't know. Like, you see a camera, it's like, dang, like, I don't want to hunt here when this guy's here. I want to hunt this spot, but, like, I don't want to hunt when the dude's here and ruin his hunt. That's why I wish I could be like, hey, like, are you hunting this spot? Like, I'm trying to go back here too because I don't want to butcher up your hunt. But, yeah, that's always my thought. It's like, man, only if I could just talk to this person and, like, get their mindset on why they have a camera here. And people are so, like, and I get it, if you have, like, a target buck with a story or something, or, like, a massive buck, yeah, people want to keep that a secret. But I, like, share it and tell, man. I tell people all the time, like, where, you know, not where I hunt, but, like, sign. Like, if I'm walking out of the woods and I see hunters, I love shooting the shit with them, man. Yeah. Like, see anything good, like, blah blah blah, like that's part of it. And that, and we always talk about, like, we got to come together, be a hunting community. But then it's things like being a secret, like, on you have a target deer or whatever, you don't want people knowing about it. I get that to a degree, because, but, like, I don't know, man, just be kind and don't take cameras down. I had a few cameras stolen from me this year, so maybe that's why I'm a little salty about it. But don't steal cameras. That's one thing for sure.
Just definitely don't steal cameras. Yeah, I would love to meet the person that I had a camera interaction with last year. Because at first I thought they were doing something stupid, and then I realized, I actually think it was me doing something stupid. So I was doing some scouting in New Jersey for bear hunting and found a spot that I wanted to hang a camera. And I didn't use a cell camera there. I just put a regular SD camera there, and I did this in, I don't know, late August sometime, and came back a few weeks later in September, and I'm walking in, and I looked, and I see, as I'm walking in, I'm looking for the camera, and I see this cell camera up in the air. I'm like, man, that cell camera is really close to where I'm expecting my camera to be. And this person puts it up about 10, 12 feet in the air, pointed down to try to avoid bears, you know, killing their camera. I think they were deer hunting on the spot, but I had a camera there just trying to observe. You know, I was focused on bear, but I get to the tree or towards it, and I look down the tree, and my camera is on the same tree about 5 feet in the air. And I'm looking, did this person really stick a cell camera on the same tree I did? Who would do that? And then I pulled the SD card and realized nobody has been back to put a camera on that tree. And I went, I just stuck a camera on somebody's tree and I didn't see their cell camera. The first time I was there, it was in the tree 12 feet above me.
Dude, two things with that. That's hilarious, because one, we had a foot and a half of snow on the ground. And it was my first time. It was I think my baby was born. I can't remember. We had a big snowstorm. So my baby was born. And I finally had a week to go out. I'm like, I've been wanting to go grab this camera for the longest time. It's like a 2-mile hike in, 2-mile hike out. you know, up and down. I go get my camera. My camera is off the tree, and there's a new camera in the exact spot my camera was. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? But eye for an eye isn't the right thing. So temper, had to give it the 24-hour rule before I went back and ripped that thing off the tree and threw it in the lake, but I didn't do it. And the same thing with you, man. I just set a camera up earlier in the month, and I put it on the tree, and I walk back. I keep walking. Within 10 yards, there's a cell cam right there pointed the other direction. I'm like, oh, dang it. Like, I just set this, thought I had a good spot, set a camera up, and boom, camera right there. Mm. Dude probably watched me and was like, what's this kid doing?
Absolutely. And then somebody made a meme or a reel or something about it, like, people on public land, man.
Yeah, right. That's me. Because, yeah, I know. Those are funny. But, like, I've done that too, man, where I'm walking out and I feel like an a-hole and I go, you know, I butcher someone's hunt. It's happened to me. It's happened to me plenty of times. And unfortunately, I've done it to people as well, you know, unwillingly, unintentional, but it happens. I mean, it is public land. I don't know any better.
It happens.
I don't know where you're at.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, this has been a fun conversation. I thank you for sharing some thoughts on scouting to just get mentally prepared for this season. Before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to share in addition to what we talked about?
No. You can. You know, I got the Buck Down podcast and Instagram page. If you want to check it out, go for it. Try to keep it tactic related and, you know, like we said, trying to get a little bit in the, you know, mindset and whatnot. We're in June, you know, we're just getting ready for the season. Velvet's popping up, so excitement's starting to come. Personal page is Alex Gross on Instagram. Only thing you'll find there is my wife, my dog, and my family. That's pretty much it. And I post on there probably once a year, so it's a pretty boring page. But the other one, you can go check that out. Tune into the podcast, see if you like it. If not, let me know.
Absolutely. Yeah, guys, please check out the Buck Down podcast. A lot of cool people, whether they're from around here or faces that you've seen on other shows and stuff. You know, Alex has a lot of good guests on there, so be sure to check it out because it's definitely relatable. So thanks for being part of this show and sharing that with us, Alex.
Yeah, of course, and thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It was awesome. It's always good to talk to you guys.